Welcome back to season two of This Modern Brand, the podcast where we pull the curtain back on some of America's most influential brands to break down their strategies, values, and innovations. Today, we're tackling a question that's more relevant than ever. What makes independent agencies different, and why does it matter now more than ever? But before we dive in, I'm thrilled to be joined by my co-host, Katie Hornaday, who's the Chief Creative Officer at Barclay OKRP. Katie is the driving force behind all things creative, leading our agency's work across video content design and production. Welcome, Katie.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
You bet. We're excited to have Doug Zanger with us today, founder and editor-in-chief at Indie Agency News. Doug, it's great to have you. Would love to have you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, you know, first though, Katie's got like that lid on and it is a little chilly out here. So I want to match this. So we'll talk about these hats a little bit later, but let me go ahead and match this.
Yes.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Those you can't see, yes. He just donned a Philadelphia Eagles stocking cap.
Okay.
Joke's on you, Zanger. Parks doesn't care about
I know, but you're in Kansas City, ergo, you know, that's the mothership. So I have to do a little something for my Philly people, lifetime Philadelphia sports fan. So Jason, to answer your question, I break my career down into three acts, and I am into the third act right now. A little bit more of background on me, native of the Minneapolis area, lived in, born outside of Minneapolis, lived there till I was 12, moved to suburban Philadelphia. Went to middle school and high school there, went to college in Denver, did a stint in London, moved to Portland, Oregon in 1992. And this is where I've been ever since. And I think like most of us in our 20s, I knocked around a little bit. I worked for a Japanese bank because I have an international studies degree. So I figured I'd use it. Worked for Nike for a while. And then I got started in this business. And this is where Act One really started. I started in this business by writing radio scripts for $35 a pop. I was just trying to make extra money. And from there, started doing voiceover, then started learning production, and then just really started getting immersed into the radio business. Got hired part-time to be on the air at a station ranked 19th out of 23. And so I was doing that, waiting tables, hustling whatever voice work I could get, whatever writing I could get. And then I became a studio rat to figure out how to do production. 1999, the station changed to hip hop and R&B. Everybody got let go but me. So I was employee number one on the programming staff, and it was five glorious, glorious years. And it was independently owned by Paul Allen at the time, the late Paul Allen. So we had a hip hop station on one side, a conservative news talk station on the other, which was hilarious. So I did a bunch of things, including running a street team, was a morning show producer for a few years. And then the guy who helped me get hired, unfortunately, passed away. So I took over for him as production director, but I had known a number of people in the agency business in Portland, especially at Wieden and Kennedy. And I thought, you know what? I think I could build an in-house agency at a radio station. So I gave that a go and it worked, and then got recruited by a bigger company. It was a corporate radio company called Entercom, now Odyssey. Lasted there for about 3 years, maybe 2 years too long. And then went out on my own, worked for a company called Stillwell Partners, and this is starting Act Two, which really accelerated my exposure to this industry, because I'd been pretty much Portland and then the Pacific Northwest. But working for Stillwell Partners, they run the Advertising Week B2B events. And so back then it was New York and they were getting London on board. And you know, I have to thank Matt Schechner and Lance Pillersdorf a lot for not only giving me the opportunity to work with them, but also to let this long-haired freak from Portland get a chance to meet so many great people in the business. And that's really what built the foundation. 2015, The Drum approached me and said, we've never had an editor in the US. Would you like to join us? Did that. That was great. Loved working with them. And then Adweek recruited me in 2018. So all of these were a combination of independent or private equity. And then the Martin Agency came calling in 21. So I went over there for a year. Really enjoyed it. Really liked the Martin people a lot. When you start getting to the layers above, you know, it was fine, but corporate's just not my jam. And so went out on my own, started consulting, and this is where Act Three is. So I think in Act Three, you determine what it is you love doing and where you believe your talent best fits. I love broadcast. I've been very lucky to have been trained really well. So I know I sound like a radio guy. I get it. but it's something that I love and I know that I'm pretty good at. The other thing that I really loved and felt as though that I was being a real contributor to was the independent space. So in each of those acts, and especially in Act Two, I was always gravitating towards the independent orbit. And that has to do, you know, with Wyden here in Portland, but so many amazing agencies. And I thought, well, I love these two things. And there's never been a clearly defined home for independent agencies. AdAge Small Agency is amazing. Love that. Little Black Book is great. Serves a great role and a great service. But I saw an opportunity where we could be very, very clearly defined as indie and also be more about broadcast. We still do written. We still do the things that a trade would do. But our whole position on this is to be broadcast first. So live streaming, video, audio. The brief is to build the global home for independent agencies, emphasis on the word home, emphasis on the word global. The mission is to serve independent agencies and the brilliant people behind them. And the goal is more visibility for indies and more choice for marketers. So ostensibly, it is a visibility platform. There are five pieces to it. But overall, it's making sure that we're telling the story and that we have a point of view and a position that we love indies and we're always going to support indies and we're indies' biggest fans.
Do you remember your first client when you were writing radio spots on the side?
I'm trying to remember. I think it might have been, oh my God, I'll have to reach out to Gus. It was probably some car dealer, but
that was my guess.
But yeah, I did a lot of tier three. Let's put it that way. did a ton of tier three. But the one freelance client that paid really well and paid on time was an adult bookstore. And we'll call it an adult bookstore. That's
what was the media buy for that? That'd be interesting.
Oh, it was direct. It was just, you know, so you had, it was all innuendo and just like funny and, you know, quirky stuff. You know, I had a character built, but there were some, I had this character named Benoit but we couldn't do anything with it because of copyright. So he was the fantasy cop. And so, you know, and I think that probably portended, you know, the morning show stuff, being a morning show producer. It was great. I mean, it living in hip hop for 5 years was amazing. Our team was really diverse, and that's when it got hardwired into me that diversity, inclusion, like a good quality, diverse team, it's always going to win. It's always going to win in performance. It's always going to win in revenue. And that's borne out in every stop that I've had where it's been more diverse teams.
So, you know, we've been talking about independence and we're obviously all in that independent camp. So would be really curious to hear why, like what made you gravitate towards this indie world, and would love to hear from both from Doug and Katie on this one.
Katie, you go first.
Okay. Yeah. You know, when I think about how I started my career in this industry, I do think it had a lot to do with a lot of luck. I got a job at Crispin Porter and Bogusky in the wild and crazy Boulder days. You know, there was like a teepee in the middle of our concrete floors. And it was before even MDC or Stagwell now had gotten involved. And there was this incredible spirit to the agency. But the thing that I loved most about it was that there was this group of people at the top, Tiffany Rolf and Andrew.
Oh my God.
And Dave and just all these people who had built the place into what it was. And I loved this idea that you could have impact on what an agency was. And after I left there, I went to Mullen Lowe, and that was amazing. And still had that spirit, even though it was part of a holding company. We had just moved back into the city, and Alex Lakey was at the helm, and, you know, Kristen was there, and we were all just hellbent on turning it into something. And so I think for me, that is the thing that is prevalent in every independent agency. Sometimes you might get lucky inside of a holding company.
Yep. But
really, at indies, you find the spirit of your ability to mold something at any level. You know, ACD, CCO, whatever. If you believe that you can be part of turning something into something you can be proud of being a part of, I think an indie is where you can do it.
You mentioned Kristen, so I'm presuming Kristen Cavallo.
The one and only.
Love her. Loved working with her.
Same.
So the question is, what made me gravitate? Is that really what
it
is? So we all have a Kristen Cavallo story, by the way. I think part of it is we have three awards. I'm going to contextualize this. So we have our current thing that we're doing is top 40 design. And the next one we're going to do is top 40. It's a people award, but it's called Weirdos, Misfits, and Underdogs. And the thing that I've noticed was I've never been comfortable in the mainstream. I've been comfortable in the margins. So if you take a look at just stuff, so let's just take a look at our industry. You have mainstream, which is generally the corporate vibe, the margins, which is pretty much where I think independence lives. And then you got the fringe, which is, well, we know what happens with the fringe, depending on what. So sometimes the fringe becomes margins, becomes mainstream. But I gravitated towards this idea of, like, you know, I'm a little bit of a weirdo. I was always a little bit of a misfit. I don't know if the underdog thing really fits because I'm a, you know, straight middle-aged white man in advertising. But I like the scrappiness, and I think that I like the underdog mentality. And I think that having grown up, ostensibly grown up outside of Philadelphia in New Jersey, like, there's a little chip on the shoulder, and that's good. And so I think I gravitated to it because I always felt welcome. Let's put it that way. I think that's really the thing, is that people identified me and saying, oh yeah, he's a little bit different. I would go to New York and it's, who's that long-haired guy? It's like, oh, that's Doug from Portland. Like, oh, so I was known as Doug from Portland. I'll take it, you know, or Zanger from Portland. Usually people just say my last name. And I just thought, yeah, you know what? Better to be known for something, I guess. And so, but it was the indies that always made me feel more welcome. And even when I was in the trades at Adweek and at the Drum, I always just felt this kinship with it. And I think there is something visceral about that. So to Katie's point, I think that there is this hustle to it. There is this constant quest for finding things that will make not only your client's business grow, to make your business grow, but ultimately it comes down to people growing. And when people are growing, then the rest of it should take care of itself. And so with indies, and this is a little bit of a generalization, and so I want to caveat this a little bit. If you're a holding company, you're worried about the holding company's business. If you're an independent, you are really, really focused in on ensuring that you are doing whatever you can for your client's business. And I'm not saying holding companies don't do that, but there's that lingering thing of, what are the shareholders going to think at IPG or Omnicom or OmniG or whatever they're going to call it. But I think the other piece too is, and what I've learned, and this is anecdotal, is that marketers love it when senior people are involved, because, hey, all the senior people pitched it, we won the business. Oh, here's Chip. He's your junior art director that's going to work on your national campaign. Who? So I think there's some consistency, and honestly, the vibe. There people underestimate the importance of vibe. And that matters. And it's going to be different at every agency, but the thing that is constant is there's always seems like there's a quest for something bigger and better. And if I'm a brand, by the way, I want that mentality, because if the mentality of the agency is we are always seeking to do more and to do better, if I'm a CMO and I know that I have an agency that does that, sign me up.
Jason, I'm going to turn this around on you as the host of this podcast, and I'm going to ask a question.
I'm just supposed to ask the questions. So I have to answer them too.
Yeah, this time. Okay. You're on my time now. Okay, so how does being independent allow agencies to pivot faster or look or take on bolder creative ideas or risks than a holding company would? And I would love specifically to hear about it from your perspective in business development. Curious to hear what you think it looks like going up against a holding company, and how sort of we're able to cut through that noise as a big indie.
Well, I think, you know, I'm going to build on what Doug said, because, you know, going back into marketers want senior folks, people that are invested in their business, to be a part of their business going forward. And I think that, to me, it's that simple of an answer. You know, when I'm doing my opening, not to give it away, but oftentimes I talk about, you know, one of the reasons independence matters is you're looking at the people in this room who are going to make the decisions. I don't have to pick up a phone and call somebody to ask for permission in New York or London or Paris. I'm looking at you in the eyes, and so I can simply pivot faster because we're the ones driving. And I think that's a kind of obvious but real differentiator when it comes to independent agencies over holdcos, who, like Doug said, they've got to balance shareholders, balance the other sister agency that they partnered with in the pitch and all that, where we don't.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Good job, Jason.
Thank you.
Since I've now taken control of this podcast, I'll ask another question. What are some, like, if you look at what we've seen maybe in the last year or so, like, where do you think there's some specific examples of independent agencies delivering work that wouldn't have happened inside of what we presume a holding company might allow?
Ooh.
Got one?
God, that's a good question. I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's necessarily one moment. I would say that it's more around consistency. So let's take like the humor category, for example, right? So Partyland does a great job with Everyman Jack. Men's Warehouse stuff is super, super solid. But it's very clear. And the thing is, you know this, Katie, I mean, you've done comedy forever, is there's a discipline to it. And if it's not done right, then it's a lot more than like, oh, it fell flat, like we talk about in Super Bowl commercials. That stuff has to work hard, and it does work hard, and it can work really, really hard. So I look at a Partyland, I look at like a Curiosity with Dude Wipes. I know I'm missing a bunch, like Quality Meats doing great stuff. High Dive does great stuff. So I think that it's not so much one campaign, but I think that there tends to be, and I don't want to generalize, because there are some holding companies that do really good work. And I worked for one at the Martin Agency, and you know, love those people. I wish they were independent. Oh my God. I wish IPG had divested from them. Listen, Deutsche New York, Val DeFebo, love, just like awesome, love them. But I think that what I noticed is there's a little bit more creative ambition. It feels like it's a tick higher. It feels like it's more considered. It feels like it's a little bit more thought through. It feels less predictable. Mm-hmm. There. So I think that what I see, and again, I'm looking at one very small slice of this, but then I look at LaStoria, a great production company out of Colorado, that does the Boom Supersonic stuff. I take a look at some of the specialty agencies that are members, yeah, and around travel, around QSR, St. John in Jacksonville, yeah, Florida, right? Yeah. So I think everyone understands that the work needs to work harder than ever. And I do think that indies give it a little bit more ambition. And I think that's the word. Because if you're a marketer that wants to be ambitious, talk to an indie first. And if you're like, I don't know, my boss might like to have DDB instead, then you make that decision. But you have to give it a fair shake to see if your ambition meets an indie agency's ambition. And quite frankly, it goes the other way. If you're an indie and a marketer comes in saying, oh yeah, we're going to be ambitious, and then you peel the onion back and it's like, oh no, they just want basic stuff. Probably don't want that business anyway, right? Yeah. So I think that I don't think there's one that stands out. I think it's a collection, but I just feel like, and creative is subjective, right? The results are objective, but creativity is subjective. I gravitate more towards things that are going to make me laugh or make them cry. And that's what I said as a copywriter when I was a creative director. I was just like, I'm either going to make you laugh or I'm going to make you cry. There's no middle ground. If you want to go that route, that's fine. And listen, I did a lot of tier three car ads. They did nothing. So there were a few that were really good, but Yeah, but they were like, yeah, great idea. Let's talk about the MSRP. I'm just like, all right, yeah. Let's spend 40 seconds on a VIN number. So.
Well, you called out some really great ones. And I think I would say for all of those, you can sense that they're operating without a tether, both in good and bad ways. And like even what you said earlier, you know, the idea that as an indie, we are playing for your business, not just the business of our holding company. And I think there's also this element of like, there's nowhere to hide when you're an indie. I can't if I do great work or if I don't do great work, you know, it'll be sort of part of this like sea of work that comes out of giant gray box. It's like you're playing for like your own name and your own
reputation
and your reputation. Yeah. And like there is, it is that chip on the shoulder that fuels so much that it's exciting and fun.
Yeah. And here's the thing too, is, you know, one of the things that has come up in this industry for a very long time, and I think it was much more acute years ago, not so much today. So Katie, let's take a look at Cannes Lions or any of the award shows. And I'm pro awards because number one, it's part of our business. But number two, I think it's a reward for a job well done. And when I would see, like when we would win stuff at Martin, it wasn't so much like Jerry Hoke or Ashley Marshall or Mick or Danny getting stoked about it. They were. But to see that junior that worked on it there in the credits and they just like that tailwind is so incredible to watch. And then you take an indie that's never won. So we have a member in Reykjavik called Brandenburg. And I used to cover them when I was at Adweek. I freaking love these people. They are amazing. They won Iceland's first Cannes Lion last year. And so it's like stories like that. When I was at Adweek too, I had this Brazilian creative come up. We were doing a party and David Greiner introduced me to him and he goes, you know, you guys wrote something about me. And I called my mom and I said, I finally made it to Adweek. And then you realize what that actually means. And so that's why this idea of service really matters, right? But going back to this, so it was much more acute years ago, but scam ads, and they're still out there and, you know, and stuff like that. But I think that the reward for an award is, you know, it's really important to get those tailwinds. And I forgot the question. What was the question again? I started rambling.
I don't know, but I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So if creative ambition is, you know, again, in general, independent superpower, one might argue that their Achilles heel would be scale.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I would love, you know, so how do independents compete on, as we look at scale, both in terms of talent, capabilities, et cetera, without the deep pockets from?
So a few things. There are great independent networks. So I look at like Worldwide Partners or Amen or TAN. You know, you got these networks that are peppered around that are excellent options for indies. And so if you're going into a pitch and you're a creative agency, but you need media, then you can partner up. Now, those organizations, they do have a certain, you know, they have a certain number of agencies that they can absorb. So for us, that's a big priority for us. We're mediators. And I tell people this all the time. This is the members' platform. We're here to nudge it along. And part of that is, if an agency, and in fact, I had a conversation with an agency recently about this, you know, do you have an agency that does X, Y, and Z? And I said, we had sent out a note and no one really responded. And I said, oh yeah, you know what? Let me get you their contact info and all that stuff. It's really important to be able to stack up the right people to make it work. So I think that's one way into it. The other is sometimes you just got to let it go. And realize that it's not the time to try to, it's one thing to do a stretch goal. Let's take a look at biz dev in general. I love stretch goals, right? And so we're at 200 plus agencies. I want to get to 1,000 by the end of the year. That's maybe not likely, but we're going to try. We're absolutely going to try. And I explained to people why, right? I explained, like, I would be able to bring people on full time, and we can, you know, the mission matters because we are mission based. So, it, you know, on the biz, like the stretch part of it in biz dev should always be there. However, when it comes to operations, when it comes to some of those things where it's, you know, your ability, sometimes it's okay to just say, maybe not this time, but let's figure out 6 months down the road, let's revisit. A year down the road, let's revisit. Or again, can we build a partnership with another agency? So I think that you're going to see more of those hookups. You're a great example of this because of Barkley and OKRP, and you're going to start seeing more hookups. You've got that at DNA and, oh, what was the other? Little Hands of Stone? Was it in Seattle? I can't remember. But there's another hookup in Seattle. So I think that what we'll start seeing are these beautifully crafted islands of collaboration, and also what you're doing. And I think we'll start seeing more of those hookups. And that's good. Those are good types of collaborations because then you're playing to strengths.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, not to pull out my soapbox on this, but I do also think there is this narrative right now that is like big holding company or small are your only options. And I think that that is, well, I think we are actively proving that's not the only two options, but I also think at the same time, it's also, it's not great for every independent agency to believe that those are the only places they can play, you know, like to the point about stretch goals, having a vision for how you actually build into capabilities. We don't want to scale to the size of capabilities holding companies do. And a lot of clients don't need them.
No.
But there can be this beautiful space in between that independents can still occupy, whether it's collecting other agencies to work with or creating you know, mergers and acquisitions. But I think it's an exciting day to be part of an independent agency.
I agree. And so, you know, a couple of things that I'm thinking about here. So this idea, and it's sort of corporate-y gobbledygook, but I like this idea because, to your point, it's like it's either a big holding company, small independent agency, and really not mentioning what's in between. So I think that what we've looked at from a business perspective is it's AOR or project. And I get, you know, AOR is eroding. However, there is a middle ground there, which I coined this idea of key creative partner or key marketing partner. So a KCP or a KMP. And it's corporate speaky or whatever, but you know what? Somebody at Mondelez might love that. You know, it's just like, oh, we love that. You know, great, good. If that's what floats one's boat, then cool. So to your point, Katie, though, Wyden's been doing it forever. Mother's been doing it forever. Pereira Odell, Eric and Coleman, Venables. You know, you start going through this list of independent agencies, and I know I'm forgetting a few, and if you're going to yell at me, please, it's fine. Okay. I know it's still early. We're recording this. But that's been going on forever. And I think the perception is like, oh, they're a big agency. They're a big indie. I'm not sure. No, it's absolutely sure. And listen, there will always be a place for the holding company, side of it. And that's what some marketers are comfortable with.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to bemoan them, but I think if you're a marketer that's going for a holding company, and I think Katie, you and I can caveat this. There are some holding company agencies that still do creative work. Like Anomaly does creative work. It does great creative work. Totally. And that's it. No, I mean, I'm kidding. Martin, I'm joking.
Martin as
Oh yeah, no, I was at Martin. I had a for again, I wish they were independent. Oh,
but I think they are places that have that spirit
that
of
spirit.
Feeling like that. But the other thing I would say is I think like the middle of between holding companies and indies isn't just number of employees. It really like scaling what you can actually offer a client, you know, getting into more spaces so that you can be a unique solution.
Right. And so, I mean, I look at our list. So this time last year, we had about 55 agency members. Now we have over 200. And so, and first of all, thank you again for the support because this matters to be able to tell these stories. I look at these agencies and I see that some are small, but they have systems and processes that they've built and they can scale up to a certain point. They can do things in a way that really actually works really well for the clients and works really well for their agency. And I think that that's, again, to your point, Katie, there's this misperception that it's either, you know, this scrappy group of three people sitting in a garage or whatever. But, you know, I look at this and having talked to CMOs and marketers, when I show them, first of all, they're like, all right, long-haired freak, how you been? I'm like, cool. And then, by the way, I'm doing this thing. Oh, tell me about it. We have over 200 agencies. They're like, whoa, 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 what? And then they go look and say, I have no idea that most of these agencies existed. I said, yeah, that's the whole point, is that we're trying to raise their visibility so that you can get to know them, because that's part of the entire thing. The brief, the mission, the goal, more visibility for indies, more choice for marketers, because a marketer knows what they read and what their consultants tell them. And that's fine, but that's just the way it's been built. So when I go to a marketer and say, you know, we have this thing called Indie Agency Connect, which is our biz dev thing. It's matchmaking. We're not an agency search, because there are people who are much better at that. But when you talk to a marketer and say, hey, let us filter these for you and let's get you some options, and we'll include the coverage, we'll include some of the interviews they've done. So it's like one half of a chemistry session. So it's like, yeah, you know what? Introduce me to them. That helps everybody. And that's been that missing piece, is that there is this perception, like you said, where it's, you know, it's one thing or the other. And there's always going to be a place for holdcos, and especially on the performance end and the media end. The good news for indies, and this is what I've learned from our members, our media agency members, is this idea of being agnostic is huge.
Huge.
Holding companies have these deals, whereas an indie is agnostic. And it's just, again, going back to what is going to be best, what's going to be best for you. And there you go.
Great. Yeah. So one last question for both of you, and you only get one sentence, because we've been circling around it, I think, this whole conversation, which has been fantastic. But if you could, in one sentence, summarize why independent agencies matter today.
Oh, Jason, why are you doing that? That wasn't my sentence, by the way.
Oh, why indie? I'll give you mine. I think it's because independent agencies foster a culture of personal investment, which is good for your business, which is good for the work, which is good for the culture.
I think it's a run-on sentence, like a month. An M dash in there.
Period.
Yeah. Katie, did you start?
Comma, period.
Right. Katie, I forget. Are you art or copy?
Copy.
Okay, so you and I are both copy. That's what I thought.
Happily write that out with one period in it.
Right. M dash, M dash, M dash. I would say independents are important because good creativity builds strong businesses, M dash, and independent agencies consistently deliver on that promise.
That's perfect.
M dash. And then I'm going to, no, I'm kidding.
And with that brilliant run-on sentences, that will bring season 2, episode 8 to a close. It also brings season 2 to a close. So thanks for listening to This Modern Brand, a podcast by Barclay OKRP. Doug, Katie, thank you so much. It's been great to have you. If you've enjoyed the show, we'd love to hear from you. Please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon Music, and be sure to subscribe. For more stories and insights on how to build brands people love, visit us at barclayokrp.com.